Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks, and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together.
This is the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Welcome. If you're listening in the shower, the bathroom, the garage, where do you listen? Ben, where do you listen to podcasts?
In my car, usually.
As you're like driving or just getting some alone time from your kids?
Right. I just sit in the garage, right, in my car. No. While I'm driving, usually, is when I listen to podcasts.
Such a transportable medium.
Yeah. It's really helpful.
I listen to podcasts when I work out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I do that too.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Forgot about that.
Yeah. So wherever you're listening, welcome. We're glad that we could be in your ear holes today. Joined by my co-host, Ben Sturkey, and our friend, Aaron Nyquist. Aaron, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Good to be a part of this.
Yeah, man. It's great to have you. How about this? Instead of me introducing you, I know you're into all kinds of multi-level marketing schemes and investment opportunities. Why don't you introduce yourself to our audience? Like, who are you and like, where are you? I know you just moved, so give us an introduction to yourself.
Yeah, I mean, we could start from this week. Literally 7 days ago, my 12-year-old and I jumped in a moving truck and drove from Chicago to New York City. And then my wife and our 7-year-old and our brand new puppy, which was not a very good decision, jumped on a flight and they flew here. And we just moved to Manhattan. We're living in the Chelsea area. We're part of General Theological Seminary. Hmm. And in January, both my wife and I are jumping in to get our master's. Oh. So it's like a total life upheaval, and we are deliriously excited.
Yeah.
Wow.
You're finally going to like make something of yourself, going to get your master's degree.
That's right. It'll be
Could
the key.
Been somebody.
Yeah.
No, how did you come to figure? I mean, like, you got kids, you got a dog, you know, how'd you get here?
We do have a dog. By the way, the dog didn't sleep last night.
Oh yeah.
So I'm on about 90 minutes of sleep from last night. So if this podcast gets a little loopy, we'll know what's going on.
Yes.
No, I mean, the short answer to why seminary now is I feel like the last 5 years has been so much output, both starting the practice and launching that thing and then writing this book and like getting all this out there. And someone asked, are you going to write a second book? And I was like, I have nothing to say. I don't know anything else other than what I've
just
said.
In that one book. Yeah.
It's all in there. Yeah. So just quite frankly, we're excited to learn.
Yeah.
I want to read books that I never would have picked up. I want to take courses in things that I didn't even know existed. You know, it's just one of those seasons.
Yeah. So, great. Well, you mentioned your book and you mentioned the practice. The book you just put out is called The Eternal Current. And it's about reappropriating a practice-based faith and worship. And so will you tell us a bit about, in chapter one, I'm telling you, like half of our guests, and you and I can't go a podcast without mentioning Dallas Willard, but I was struck
I can't go a day without
mentioning. I mean, I think the divine conspiracy changed the world. Like, everybody I talk to that
that's
I respect.
That's not an exaggeration.
And love. They're like, I read The Divine Conspiracy and my life changed forever.
Yeah. Yep.
Can you describe, you don't have to pimp Dallas Willard. We'd like to do that here. But can you just describe, what that pivot, that shift was for you that led you to start something as like audaciously daring as the practice?
Yeah. Well, thanks for asking. And you're right. Like Brian Zond, same story with Dallas.
Yeah.
What a lot of people don't know is Rob Bell started Mars Hill in a living room reading chapter by chapter with like 12 people, Divine Conspiracy.
Really?
Like that's where the whole thing began. Yeah.
What a legacy.
So, I mean, this book is just, so anyways, yeah, I mean, I said it in chapter one, but, like the whole idea is, when I was just out of college, I was a worship leader at church, and while a professional Christian, like I should have been like all Christian-y, my faith fell apart and it kind of crumbled. And what I realized is it wasn't my faith. It was the understanding of faith that saw it as just kind of the substitutionary atonement thing, right? Yeah, like being a Christian is believe a couple things correctly, say a prayer, and then don't do bad stuff until heaven. And that had internalized in me. Yeah. And by the time I was 23 or 24, it ended. And I really thought like, this is my profession, but I might be done with this whole thing. Wow. And it was reading chapter two or chapter three, the Gospels of Sin Management, where I heard about the kingdom for the first time. Like I was a Christian 20 something years.
You were getting paid to be a Christian. Life. Yeah.
I was getting paid to be a Christian and I had never heard one message on the kingdom of God. The thing that Jesus talked the most about.
Okay.
It was just bonkers. But so it was just, you know, and obviously this is what you guys talk about. Like we get to join what God is doing to redeem and restore all things. Yes. And I'm like, if that's the story, I'm in.
Right. Yeah. So tell me, I grew up Roman Catholic. I was just getting through the 57 minute. When I grew up, it was just like, we got to do this thing on Sundays. And I really wasn't entering into the liturgy. You know, at the time I thought the liturgy is dead. Now I realize I was dead.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
I don't have, Ben, you have this story. Like you grew up in sort of the evangelical subculture of North America. Mm-hmm. How did we get to a place, Aaron, where we can have a really well argued, thought out faith that excludes the kingdom?
No, I know.
How do we get there?
And it's bonkers. And I think it's just, you know, whoever has the microphone, whatever part of the story was life changing to them becomes the whole story. And so I think a lot of evangelists got the microphone. And the sliver of the story that is true and beautiful. Thank God for what God did on the cross through Christ. I mean, but that became the only way to tell the story, which then obviously just became a really bad story.
Yeah.
Just a really small story, too thin.
Yeah.
So maybe tell me if this is a way to say it. Like the cross is the center of the story, but it clips the story. So it went from being like the place we read the story through, the story comes to and from, and it just becomes, it gets reduced as the entire thing.
Right. It's like the conversion is, we're being converted to something, which is participation with God for what God is doing to redeem and restore the world. Mm-hmm. We're not just converted just to not, you know. So anyways, a means to an end. I hope that's not too pragmatic. But
No. Yeah. That it's not just part of the story that was a part of the Divine Conspiracy and part of this kingdom story that was compelling for me was that it's not just about heaven when I die. Like Jesus didn't just come to fulfill some mechanics that needed to happen so that I could go to heaven when I die, but that actually, you know, heaven starts today. That eternal life starts now. And then, of course, it continues, but like there's so much more to it than just this, you know, reward somewhere out there. It felt like an insurance policy.
Like a transactional.
Right. Like I pay my dues. I figured out the mechanics to have this insurance policy. And now, just in case the worst happens, I'm taken care of.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, and so then it just raises the obvious question of, okay, great. Now, what do I do?
Yes.
You know, because that was the season where then I got to Mars Hill and joined with that community. And every Sunday, Rob was preaching about the kingdom. I mean, it was just relentless and it was beautiful and it was gorgeous and it was compelling. Except when I went home, it was so beautiful, but it had very few handles.
Yeah.
And so I would go home and my question was, wow, I wonder what Rob's going to say next week.
Yeah.
So I remember let me think. Let me see if I got you. Like your mind was blown, but your life wasn't stimulated in any meaningful way.
Yes. And I'd say even more than my mind, my heart was expanded toward the world, toward my neighbor, toward myself. Like my brain was, we were reading all these books. That's the first time someone gave me a Richard Rohr book. So I read Everything Belongs in that season. Mm-hmm. And it was just all these things were happening, but I literally didn't know what to do with it. Yeah. And so at a certain point, maybe 2 or 3 years in, the first 2 years were utterly life-changing. Mm-hmm. And then about two and a half years in, I was kind of like, okay, I have these new frameworks, but I don't know what to do. And so that's where the movement into what are the practices? How do I participate with this invitation, not just believe in a new version of the invitation?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. And that's the subtitle of the book, right? And then obviously the practice is what you ended up calling the worship service, the community that you created there.
So the practice was born out of answering a deep question, personal question, of if the kingdom gospel is true, and there is a deeper, wider story, then how do we become the kinds of people who can consistently live in congruence and alignment with it?
It's exactly right. I had come to believe that the good news was not just belief propositions, but it was an invitation to participate.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that huge shift happened.
Right.
Now I needed someone to teach me what it looked like to participate.
Right.
Yes.
And obviously that's what Christ is doing. That's the way of Jesus. That's Matthew 5, 6, 7. I mean, that's what Jesus is doing, but we can't do it alone. We can't, even with the Bible, we can't do it alone. We need a group of fellow disciples, journeyers, practicers.
Yeah.
You're naming a complete paradigm shift here, Aaron, that we have gone through. And this is why we started Gravity, is we tell people, we train people in the paradigms, postures, and practices of Jesus.
Yeah.
But what we find, the paradigms, like how did Jesus see the world, right? Postures, how did Jesus inhabit the world? And then practices, you know, what does grace and truth live like, right? What is
so good?
What does the embodiment of the kingdom actually live like?
Yeah. Yep.
But what we notice, and you, it's, you didn't get stuck here. And I wonder if you could reflect on why. Like oftentimes people will read a book by an Alan Hirsch or a Dallas Willard or a Rob Bell, and they'll hear the word missional and they'll hear the word kingdom and they'll hear the word participate, right? Or practice. And what happens is they have this new wine that they're drinking, and it's like, you know, but then they put it in old wineskins.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. So they either just rebrand what they're already doing as something new.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Right? Or they just despair and sort of just like quit. Like they just quit it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it sounds,
that's really true.
It sounds like you had the intuition, I need to create new wineskins for this new wine.
Yeah.
Can you talk us through like what's the journey from watching Rob bounce on a trampoline to starting the practice in Chicago?
Were you there that Sunday?
I remember mowing the grass, listening to that sermon on my earbuds. I remember. Yeah.
Is that a thing he really did?
Oh yeah.
That's
funny.
You know he did.
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
doesn't surprise me.
And it was in terms of performance art and even deep spiritual truth.
I'm sure.
I mean, we're talking about it now 10 years later, right?
Yeah, here we are.
But it expanded your mind and heart, but it did not invite any of the rest of us onto the trampoline, you know? Mm. And so it had such an important role. People like Rob have such an important role. As long as there's also pastors who are translating and inviting and training.
You intuited that. And so then instead of like looking for a guru or, you know, you decided to sort of craft this, architect this. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we basically, after being at Mars Hill, I moved back to Chicago, which is where we grew up, and I joined the Willow Creek Church and I was a worship leader there on the for the weekends, every other weekend. Mm-hmm. And so in my great naivete, I said, well, I'm going to bring all this stuff to the worship on the weekends at Willow. And you don't have to be a prophet to realize that that's not going to work. Yeah. And so I think so much of what I did came out of, you know, doing it wrong. Mm. And then realizing for me, there's no turning back. Mm. Like once this other way has fallen apart, there's no turning back.
Yeah.
So I'm actually in there. David, I'm so sorry for being in your space. Okay. All right. Oh yeah. Okay. Sorry. Because we don't have any space. I'm in a friend's co-working space. Okay. So yeah. Yeah, thanks, 1 week.
Thanks, David. 1 week. Thanks, David. Appreciate it.
Yeah, right. So, but yeah, it was like, it was deeply, deeply personal. I said to some of my friends when we were starting the practice, I'm not sure how to stay a Christian.
Yeah.
And this is such a cliche, but I really mean it. I've never been more compelled by Christ.
Yeah.
Like, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed, like, yes, that is the path. If ever our world needed the way of Jesus, it's right now.
Yeah.
But I didn't have any containers to live that out. And I'm not saying there weren't any. I'm sure this is happening all over the place.
Sure.
I just wasn't in one. Yeah. And so actually our senior pastor, Bill Hybels, I give him a lot of credit. He pulled me aside after about 2 years and he goes, Aaron, we're never going to do the stuff that you want us to do on the weekends.
Brass tacks.
He said, that's just not what our weekends are for. Yeah. Yeah. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah.
But then he turned and he said, but we know people need it. We know people need it.
Hmm.
He said, and I love this from Bill Hybels, like the seeker guy. Mm-hmm. He said, we know we're not doing enough for people who are Christ-centered and trying to go deeper.
Hmm.
And so he said, would you guys consider creating something on Sunday nights to explore this?
Yeah.
And I don't think he totally knew what he was launching, but I give him a ton of credit for just launching us. Yeah. And then they gave us a lot of freedom. And basically what we said is we want to be a community that doesn't just believe things about Jesus,
mm-hmm.
but is learning how to rearrange our lives in order to put his words into practice.
Mm.
Yeah.
That was the whole thing. So every week, what are we doing? We're learning how to rearrange our lives to put Jesus' words, not just into our brains,
mm-hmm.
into our hands, into our hearts, into our families, into practice.
Yes, that resonates with us.
Yeah.
Right? So we're Anglican priests, reverends, rectors, vicars, right?
Yep, all those things.
Co-vicars.
Yeah.
All of the above.
Yes. All the above.
All those
and,
things.
And one of the reasons we were drawn to the Anglican spirituality is this robust sense that worship is not an open mic. Right? So worship to God isn't about self-expression. And the more authentically I feel something or express something, the better my worship is. Yep. But worship is like...
Or at least not only about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's the dominant expressivistic sort of world we live in, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so as I read the Eternal Current, like you articulate so well this need to be formed and shaped. Like worship is a language. I think you quote John Whitlett from Calvin College. About how babies make these grunts and noises, right? And we even taught our kids a little sign language, like please and more, you know, and thank you. But eventually they have to learn the language. They don't stay with grunts, right? And so like you see, to talk a little bit about how you see worship, like the gathering on a Sunday evening or morning as not just expression, but as formation.
Yes. Well, to finish that analogy of John's, he was talking about at first we help kids express. So I'm hungry. I'm scared.
Yeah. What do you want? Say what
he said. Yes. But at a certain point, we have to teach them words they would never choose to say. But as they say those words, it forms them into the kinds of adults we know they need to become. So that's why we teach them please.
Yeah.
Not because they want to say that. No kid wants to say please,
right,
you know.
Right.
But as we say please, We become people who are more gracious. As we say, I'm sorry, we become people. So it's those practices and that are not just express, but form.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was sharing this with my wife a while ago. She was saying, why are you into all these ancient practices and why aren't we just doing music anymore and all these things? And I was trying to explain it, you know, Cramner and, you know, all this stuff. And basically, she didn't care.
Well, you see, honey.
Yeah, right. Yeah, total mansplaining. Right. You know.
Theologians playing to you.
And what was wonderful is she was like, oh. And in one perfect sentence, she said what I couldn't say in 10 minutes. She said, so basically, you want to serve a well-balanced meal every Sunday. Hmm. And I remember just thinking, like, I at that point, I'd been a worship leader probably 15, 16 years. Hmm. I had been serving the same meal every Sunday, wondering why my community wasn't getting healthier.
Mm. Yeah.
And it was a good meal. Like it was like four pop songs and a hymn. Like it was, you know, it was exciting. It was true. It was beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Psalms are full of expressive upward worship. That is beautiful.
Yeah.
But we never lamented. Mm-hmm. And we never paused to listen.
Yeah.
And we never engage the scripture other than three or four words or one verse. You know, there was all these food groups, if you will, spiritual formative food groups that we never even touched. Yeah. And that was, it just got me spinning. And so we said at the practice, you can't do everything every Sunday, but we said in over the course of 1 month, are we serving and feasting on each kind of group, spiritual food group. I know the analogy breaks down at a certain point.
Yeah, but So you mentioned like silence and like the public reading of scripture and lament. Yep. What are some other sort of meals? What are some other food groups that you introduced at the practice?
One of the pillars, and as Anglicans, you're like, yeah, no kidding. But we started doing a confession and an assurance. Mm-hmm. Well, in evangelical circles, that was just so novel. Like, why would I confess my sin? Hasn't Jesus already forgiven? Yeah, you know,
right.
And but we kept looking at all these different traditions, and that was one of the most overlapping practices we saw in all the different liturgies.
Yeah,
and so we just kind of submitted to it. Yeah. And as you know, week after week, as you name the reality that you and God both know to be true, but then as you receive the reality. For as far as the east is from the west. And so that became very central. Yeah. Prayers of the people. Again, in evangelical circles, we talk a lot about the world and we really do care, but we would very rarely pause and name specific things going on in our world.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, honestly, as Anglicans, you'll probably appreciate this. So much of what we do is based off the Anglican liturgy. From the Book of Common Prayer. I mean, our Eucharistic liturgy is basically the Anglican Eucharistic liturgy.
Yeah.
And of course, because we're evangelicals in our toes, we messed with it, you know, because we think everything needs to be original, but it's your framework.
Yeah.
It's been transformational.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So a friend of ours, David Fitch, he messed me up when I was in seminary. We were doing adult baptisms at our church just like 10 years ago. And he was telling the people who are coming to baptism, you have to memorize the Nicene Creed. You need to give us, we're going to read you like a catechism and you're going to answer these questions. And you need to be able to submit to the Lord's Prayer. And I was like, what do you mean, like memorize it? He's like, no, submit to it. I was like, well, so you mean you like recite it? He's like, no, I mean, submit to it.
And,
I was 32, getting my master's of divinity. And I had no idea what it meant to submit to a written prayer of words I didn't choose.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it struck me, like I had these realizations, these kairos moments, Aaron. And I wonder if you can relate to this. Like, I mean, you led worship from a stage 15 years. You put words on the screen. Nobody complains that they have to sing those words. No one feels stifled or it's dead because they don't get to choose the words they sing. But as soon as you put a prayer on the screen and tell people to speak words, they lose their biscuit. What's, so like, you know what I mean?
True.
They lose their biscuit. Yeah. They're like, I'm not going to pray these words. They're not from the heart. I'm like, well, you just sang these words.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And have you experienced that?
Oh, big time. And you know what I think, and I hate to admit this, I think so much of it is, at least in my context in Chicago, is a lot of the evangelical church was built on scapegoating too strong, on an anti-Catholic bias.
Yep. Yeah, kind of a reaction against
correct.
We're not that.
That's dead religion, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, it's easier to rally a group when you have a common enemy, and there are many enemies, but one was dead religion.
Mm-hmm.
And what do? They read prayers that somebody else wrote. You know, we're going to pray from our heart. And I think that was stirred up and in a really, really unhelpful way. When I started doing traditionally Catholic practices at Willow Creek on the weekend, oh my gosh, you should, we did Kyrie Eleison one time. Mm. And it, frankly, I shouldn't have done it in a minor key. Like, I should have been a little smarter. But it was fascinating because we had the room was split in thirds. The first third afterwards came up and were like, oh, that was cool. Did you write that? You know, and I wanted to say, yeah, I wrote that. But it was just new.
I invented a language called Latin. And
right. And then the second third of people walked up with steam coming out of their ears.
Oh, yeah.
And they said versions of the same thing. God saved me out of the Catholic Church. Don't you dare bring that back in here.
Yeah.
And my heart broke. I wanted to say, God has saved you. But do you realize how much of your roots got you ready for that, and how much of it is still good and beautiful? But which is why the third group was so meaningful. Mm. They would come up and they always had tears in their eyes. Mm. And they would say, thank you for helping remind me that my past wasn't all bad.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was really beautiful.
Yeah. But, so this is, I think, deeply appealing to people sort of in their bones. I think there's a fatigue, Aaron, I think you probably experienced this too. There's a fatigue of being reactionary and against. Mm. And you mentioned in your book about like including but transcending things.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Can you speak a bit, because that's what you're talking about here. Can you speak a bit about about how that's different than maybe us versus them or this, not that? What it means to include but transcend?
Absolutely. The whole idea of include and transcend, and this is obviously not my idea. This is Ken Wilber, Richard Rohr does a lot on this. I mean, this is, the whole idea is like, if you look at it linearly, moving from step one.
Yeah.
I only slept 90 minutes. Left.
Right.
I can't.
In a straight line.
From a straight line. If you're moving from step one to step two to step three.
Yes.
And you want to move to the next step, step four.
Yeah.
The easiest thing to do is demonize step three.
Right. Like, we need to get away from
this. We are a bunch of idiots and fools, and they've always been wrong. Like, we always hate the last step we were at.
Hmm.
But include and transcend reminds us that step three was the only way to get to step four. Thank God for step three. It's not enough, but it's really good, at least in part.
Right.
And so, include and transcend says, all right, we want to be step one plus a little bigger version, that's step two plus one, then plus one plus two plus three. Then, and now obviously there are toxic parts that need to be rejected, that need to be let go. You can't include everything. But the incredible loss of having to just start over from a blank slate every time you want to make any change.
Yeah.
Just the hubris of it, right?
Yeah. Sure.
Like, I'm just going to invent everything from the ground up. Of course not. Right. And so we get to learn from where we've been, but we don't have to get stuck there.
Yeah. That's a good, I think it's a good way of thinking about, you know, thinking about our own journeys is if I have an inability, it's a baby and bathwater thing, right? Where like the people who obviously came out of the Catholic bathwater you know, they couldn't receive the baby. You know, that was part of that in the last third of the people that you were talking about. But I think that's been important in my life as I'm reflecting on what you're saying. And like in my life, when I'm able to, like, it's a sign to me if I only think of some, you know, past experience, like as like, that was awesome or that was terrible. You know, it's a sign to me that there's not enough, like there's still formation that God is doing in me to help me redeem memories of the past
help me
take, basically that's the work, right? That's the work of like, I have transcended it, but now I'm doing the work of including it and saying, how was this helpful for me? How is this shaping for me? How is this formative? How can I find a way to look back on this and say, you know what? Like God was there. God was in that. God was helping me at that time. Yeah. Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of our listeners need that too. I mean, Aaron, I think your journey's shared by a lot of people, which is there's this gnawing suspicion that this is insufficient. And I think the cultural move is to just react against it, right? Mm-hmm. So because because it's insufficient, it's therefore wrong. Yep. And I'm going to rage against the machine, right? And I think your story about redeeming and including these parts of your evangelical low church background, which is a lot of our listeners, into a more robust, deeper, wider, thicker practice, spirituality and worship is something that that all of us need as a model.
Totally.
Yeah.
Second grade is absolutely brilliant when you're seven.
Right, right.
It's so good,
and
you can't skip it.
Yeah.
It's the only way to get to third grade.
Yeah.
But if your teacher tries to convince you that second grade is the whole story,
right,
it's really dangerous.
Yeah. Or it's all downhill after this grade.
Right. So how do we honor each of these stages and each of these streams without making them the ending point? Yeah. It takes a lot of discernment, humility, trial and error.
Yeah.
There are things I'm still a little, I'm holding on to, but I don't think will for long.
Yes.
And there's other things that in my rush to change, I threw away that I'm actually going back and kind of mining for because I realize I started doing recently a quiet time again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like
Tell us more about this. I've heard of these.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I tried that once. That was the only thing.
Yes.
Yeah, right. That was the only thing. You either did a quiet time or you were backsliding.
Or you're a pagan. Like,
those were your two options.
Yeah.
Or you're a pagan. And, you know, being in these ecumenical streams, now I'm learning all these different practices and all these kinds of things, and I'm trying to incorporate them too. But recently, I've just been getting back into, I read the lectionary readings from this day, and I do some journaling and prayer about it. And it's been really meaningful.
Yeah.
Well, so maybe I'm, it's full circle. I don't know.
That's right.
That's amazing.
Yep.
You're naming two, this might be a whole different conversation. You're naming a different way of believing than I think a lot of us grew up in. So I think the first 15, 20 years of my Christian spirituality, it was about getting everything right, nailing down all the questions, right? Making sure I'm in the right tribe, camp, position, place, side.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And what you're describing is I'm living faithfully today. I'm incorporating what I've learned, but tomorrow God may teach me something different and I need to be supple and adaptable to that.
Absolutely.
And that's just that's a different way of holding faith, right?
Yeah. 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 I mean, if it's fundamentally a relationship, not just fundamentally a dogma, I mean, my wife has changed me dramatically in the last 17 years, because we're in an actual relationship. Of course she has, and I have with her.
That's great. Man, this is so encouraging and honestly inspiring to talk to you.
I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, thanks for giving us your time. And I think maybe if there's somebody listening who is 2010 Aaron, is just like, man, this isn't cutting it. You know, I've got to figure out how to expand or deepen our worship or liturgical practice, like what are one or two or three, other than getting the Eternal Current, which I think is an incredibly accessible, readable. No, it really is. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are like one or two or three like things that you could give, maybe submit to people for next steps?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned my book, but any book that takes you out of your streams. For me, I was too scared to go to the local synagogue or the local parish or the local anything else. But I could start reading. And that was a little bit safer. So start reading. I mean, read For the Life of the World by Alexander Schmemann.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally a... It's a total paradigm shifter. You don't have to go to an Eastern Orthodox church that Sunday. Start with that book. So start by reading. But then secondary, take a Catholic friend out to lunch and say, you know, I have a spiritual director who is a Jesuit priest. And I one of the times we were meeting, I said, Father Michael, what do you do every morning? Like, tell me. Yeah. All I have is this quiet time thing. What do you do?
Yeah.
And he went on and just shared a number of different practices and just light bulbs went off. Like, oh, you can do that? Oh, you can do that? You know, so get shoulder to shoulder and across a table with people who are walking with Christ, who are participating in what God is doing in a different way.
Yep.
Just ask questions and learn. You're not debating them. You're not trying to convince them of anything. You're trying to learn. And then find... I think the third step is to find some spaces that feel safe to you, but also stretching to go worship with some different communities.
Yeah.
And some of it will be horrifying. Some of it will bore you to tears. And some of it will open up new spaces that you're like, I can't believe this is part of our tradition too. So,
I love it. I like ask for like quick fixes, things to do. And Aaron's like, just listen to people.
Yeah.
And appreciate appreciate their spirituality. Let's
see what happens. Yeah.
This is great.
And if all else fails, try doing a Kyrie Eleison in a minor key and just see what that stirs up.
Right? Yeah. Go, okay. Go to a seeker service and do
and
a minor
key. Just like drop it on.
Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah. It just, I'll close with this. It occurred to me, Aaron, as you were talking, the Ancient Future Faith series by Robert Weber. Did you were you familiar with any of those books?
He was 30 years ahead on all of this stuff.
Yes, but I think honestly, this book, The Eternal Current, is like a it's weird to say modern day because that was 20 years ago. But I really feel like it does the same work in a much more, I think, accessible. And you know, Bob didn't really tell his story as much in his books, but you weave the construction of the practice with your story and what you were learning, and it just puts the cookies on a shelf that we can, you know.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
So pick up the book.
I was joking with my wife. Go ahead. I hope this book is a gateway drug for people.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't go into the super depths in any of the sections, but like, it talks a little about centering prayer. Mm-hmm. Well, I hope anyone who that it connects with says, all right, I'm going to read Father Keating, you know, I hope it's a gateway for people.
That's great.
So I think it's, I want to affirm, I think it's written to woo and help people appreciate rather than to convince, argue, inform, right?
Yeah. That's good. Man.
And so it just stirs your heart.
That's right. That's a good posture.
Thanks for saying that.
Yeah.
Aaron, is there how else can people connect with you if they want to reach out and connect?
Yeah, the usual ways: Twitter, Aaron Neek, I think AaronIeq.
We'll put a link.
Insta.
Okay.
And then my website is aaronnequist.com, and that has all the information, a new liturgy, and all that business.
Great.
So
great. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll put those links in the show
great
notes
talking
as well.
To you guys.
God's blessings in New York City, brother.
Yeah, man.
Enjoy.
Blessings
same
on this
to
new
you.
Journey.
Get some sleep too.
All right.
Thanks.
See you. Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you enjoy learning from this podcast, please be sure to show your support by rating, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes. Be sure to share with your friends on social media too. And we would love to hear from you, so please email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. You can join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.